all on page 357. This is a Hanukkah shir. I think page 357 in the regular art school sitter. You can get an English art school if you want, but the one part of Hanukkah that people are very confused by is Mahus Asur. It's also one of the most unbelievable things that we say all year long, Mahus Asur. We don't know who the author was. He was a person by the name of Mordechai, or at least I don't know who he was. A person by the name of Mordechai. We don't know exactly when it was written, but it's clear that the last charuz, the last part of it, was not written at the same time as the others. Or it was edited very, very much so. I can't imagine that this last paragraph would have made it through the editors of Christianity. I would assume that at some point it was switched around or whatever, something like that. So let's go through this. The whole line of Mo's Tzur, and to understand what it's saying, is Mo's Tzur. This is the stronghold of Tzur, Yeshuasi, my salvation. Tzur is a name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is used when tzarus happens, when bad things happen, and we have to understand what it's all about. The rock, for example, when Chas V'Shalom, a person passes away, you say the line HaTzur Tamim Pa'alo. The rock, all of his works and everything he does is perfect. It's part of Tzidduk HaDin, and that should never be Zohu, we should never have to say it ever again, but that's the line of Tzur. Tzur are the letters of Tzadik V'Ralo. Tzadi and Vav Resh is Tzadik V'Ralo, that there are bad things that happen to good people that are tzaddikim, that have bad things happen to them. And Ma'oz Tzur is that even though we're going through gulfs, even though there are bad things that happen to us, we know that the rock, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is Yeshuasi, is my salvation, who will help me, L'cha Noel L'shabech, and therefore to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is fit to praise. We are ready to praise. We are ready to praise you. So Tikon Peis Tfilasi, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu a prayer to set up the house of our prayers, meaning a reference to the base of Mikdash, Nisham Toda Nizabech, and the first korban we will bring there will be a korban toda. We will thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for everything that you've done. Everything you've done. Now, I've never looked up the subject of what is the very first korban that we'll bring. Are we going to consecrate the base of Mikdash the same way it was with the Tamid Shobein Harbayim? Or is it going to be a different type of korban, like a korban toda? It seems that it will be a korban toda over anything else. L'eis tochin matbeach. At that moment, they will prepare. Matbeach is translated as a toveach, the slaughterer, mitzor hamenabeach, from the enemy who barks. Now that takes a little bit of work. Let's try to understand. First of all, number one, who's the slaughterer? Well, we say it every Pesach at the very end of Chag Gadyah, right? As we go through, the asa hashochet. Right, the shochet comes and kills the shor. Right, and then afterward we have the Malach HaMavetz. Afterward we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself coming along. A lot of different translations as to what that refers to exactly, but in the Pashit Pshat behind the Zemer, it seems that the shor is somehow a reference to Edom. Edom, the goring ox. There's a gematria that goes with it, that the word shor, shin vav resh, is a gematria of 506 altogether. Esav, when you spell out his name, as in ayin, sin, vav. Ayin is ayin yud nun, sin is sin yud nun, and vav is vav al vav. If you put those letters together, is 503. And the three letters of shor is 506. It's supposed to be that Esav stands for shor, but aside from that, in the idea of what an ox is, an ox that gores is supposed to be something that destroys and knocks down. There is an ox of Kedusha that we have up on our beautiful stained glass windows. The ox of Kedusha is Yosef HaTzadik. The ox of Tuma is a reference to Esav. And Yaakov Avinu would not leave Laban to go meet Esav until Yosef, who is the Lahava, the flame that would destroy the straw of Esav, until Yosef was born, the ox that gores in Kedusha, that learns Torah, that ox is the one that's able to destroy Esav. On a side note, you should know, there is a chamor of Tuma as well. The donkey of Tuma is Yishmael. Am hadoma lechamor, as we all know, Avram and Yitzchak saw on the mountain, the Har Moriah. Avram turns to Yishmael and Eliezer, who were sitting there, and said, "Do you see the light on top of Har Moriah by the Akedah?" To which Yishmael and Eliezer both said, "No." So he said, "Shvulacham poi machamor, sit here with the donkey. Am hadoma lechamor, that became a nation known as donkeys. That chamor is a reference to Yishmael, that he has burdens on his back, and we have a chamor of Kedusha. Who's the donkey of Kedusha?" Yisachar. Yisachar, although Mashiach is supposed to ride in a donkey, that's part of the reason why. Yisachar is supposed to be that. And there's two types of learning. Yosef, the goring, getting involved in learning and pulling himself into pilpul and other different types of learning. And Chamor, Yisachar, who takes the burden on his back and does bekiyas. The Iyun of Torah and the bekiyas of Torah are able to destroy the tumah of Yishmael and Esav. And this is what we refer to, that it says, La'ez tochin mazbeach, when you prepare the slaughterer who's supposed to destroy Edom, the malach, the shochet, that destroys Edom and Esav, reference to Mashiach ben Yosef, mitzor hamenabeach, from the enemy who barks. The bark is also a reference to Shalosh Shuddos, when we sing Askinu Sudasa de Mehem Nusa, which is an idea. There's quite a bit about klavim tzoakim, about dogs that bark. Does anybody here have a pet dog? No? Okay, dogs are supposed to be tame, so that's good. We won't say that. But I would have skipped it out. But barking dogs is supposed to be filled with tumah. They're mentioned throughout all these different phrases and things, whatever it is, that I guess are Kabbalistic, that dogs that are barking are supposed to be evil for a person. And that's what it means by the barking enemy. Uz egmor, and at that point I will finish the Shir Mizmor Chanukas Mizbeach. We will sing the Mizmor of Choktes Mizmor Shir L'Chanukas Abayis. That's the idea of what we sing every morning before Baruch Sha'amar. That's the shir that we will sing at that moment when we set up the Beis HaMikdash. That's the future that's starting off the acrostic, all of this type of idea of the Charuzim. It was starting off with a good thing of let's bring about the Mashiach and bring about everything. Then he goes into the four Galus, which leads into Galus Edom. Ra'os Savanashi. Many evils were put upon my soul, biyagon kochi kila, with the weariness of my strength I have ended. In other words, I was destroyed. All my strength was destroyed by the amount of work that I had to do in Mitzrayim. Chayai miruru bikoshi, they embittered my life with hardness, as a reference to vayamaruru eschayehem ba'avoda kasha. They embittered their lives with hard work. Bishibud malchus egla, in the servitude of the kingdom that is known as a female calf. There are a couple references to Egla. Now it's funny that Egla would not be the reference that you would usually use for Mitzrayim, but it's clear that when they left Mitzrayim, Bnei Yisrael understood, and the Erev Rav, who came from Egypt, understood there was something that was in Egypt that had to do with an Egel. Some type of Avodah Zarah that had to do with an Egel. They made the Egel Azav. The Erev Rav knew there was something that an Egel had shaykhis to Mitzrayim. What exactly was it? We don't know, but there is a medrash brought down by the Yalkut Ruvaini, an awesome medrash. What was the holiday in this week's Parsha that Yosef HaTzadik was left in the house with Zleika, the wife of Potiphar? What was the holiday where everybody was going out and celebrating? What was that holiday? I'm sorry?
Birthday.
No. It doesn't say a birthday.
No,
exactly.
Later. No, at the end.
It says later on with the butler and the baker. It says it was the birthday. But at the time it just says, Rashi says it was a Yom Shel Avodah Zarah. Day of Avodah Zarah. What was the holiday? So the Medrash, Yalkut Ruvaini brings that there was a king of Mitzrayim before Paro whose name was Apish. Aleph Pei Yud Shin. Apish, when he died, created a form of Avodah Zarah that he sunk into the Nile River. He made a calf, and he put that calf into the Nile River. And every year, on the day that he died, on his yahrzeit, he had this calf that flew up from the river and would fly around the moon. It was the cow that jumped over the moon. I would assume that's where it all came from. And that cow was something they used to throw things at, and it was called Yom Shel Apish, that they had at the end of the year, and that was the holiday they were celebrating, where everybody was there except for Yosef and Zleika, the wife of Potiphar. They were the only two people that weren't there, that weren't involved in that worship of Avodah Zarah. And that's why it might have been called Malchus Egla, a kingdom that was known as the calf Malchus, which they understood from there. That's where the Ego Azov stemmed from. That's where it was. The Yalkut Ruvaini brings that down in Parshas Kisisa. Uviyado HaGedola, we all know the Yad HaGedola of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the five fingers, the Yad HaGedola of Vayar Yisrael, the Yad HaGedola Asher Otzah Hashem B'Mitzrayim, Hotzi Es HaSkula, God brought out the Amasagula, the treasured nation. Chel Paro vechol zaro yordu ke'evin b'metzula. The armies of Paro, notice it does not say Paro, and all of his children, they fell like stones in the depths of the sea. Now, like stones is a little bit of a strange reference. I don't know where that comes from, because we all know that there were three different types. Azgasher, definitely, but we have that some of them drowned like sticks, some of them drowned like straw, some of them drowned like stones. The ones that weren't so bad drowned like stones, that they died almost immediately. The sticks ones were, it took a little bit more for them to die. The straw ones died even less. So why it specifically says Evan, I don't know, although it may have some reference to the tsur that we started off with, the rock of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they all drowned inside there, and that ends Golos Mitzrayim. We're on the next Golos. Devir Kadjo Evyani, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us to the Beis HaMikdash, the holy Devir, the area that's known as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bayis. V'gam Sham Lo Shakatzti. And even there was no quiet or tranquility. Uvan No Geis V'Higlani, the enemy came and exiled me. Ki Zorim Avadati, because I worshipped Avodah Zarah. As we all know, there were three reasons why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed: Avodah Zarah, Shvichos Damim, and Gili Arayis. He specifically is mentioned Ki Zorim Avadati, that in theory we would have been saved if it was just Gili Arayis and Shvichos Damim, just those two. Yain Ra'al Masachti. Now this in and of itself is a strange reference. Yain Ra'al Masachti. I mixed in the wine of bitterness, which is a reference to Al Naros Bavel, Sham Yashavnu V'gam Bachinu V'zachorinu Tzion. We say it ourselves on Pesach, V'hi She'amda Lavoseinu V'lanu. And it's mentioned specifically by the lines of Yecheskel, V'shachores V'lo Miyayin. The concept is that there's a concept of being drunk without drinking wine. When our minds are not secure, where we can't think of things correctly, where things are happening and we're just not thinking straight, we have an inability to make the right decisions, that's called as if you're drunk. V'shachores, and you are drunk, V'lo Miyayin. It is a line that saves us from the gullus that we're in, because whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, why did you do these bad things? Our taina back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, it wasn't clear. We had no Beis HaMikdash. We had no ability to be machaper for ourselves like the korbanos were. It's just not the same anymore. So in that we say, yain ra'al masakti, we drank or we made for ourselves a wine of bitterness in which we couldn't take anymore. And that's what we mean by v'hi she'amda lavoseinu v'lanu. The famous word for v'hi she'amda, what stands for us, for our fathers and us, and why we were able to survive, is v'hi. Vav sidrei mishnah. Hey chum shei toira. Yud is the asteris adibros, and aleph is our amuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the v'hi, the vav hei yud aleph. That's the pshat that's given. But it's more than that. V'hi she'amda is the cup of wine that we're holding in our hands when we sing v'hi she'amda, is this wine. It's as if we're drunk in Golos. That's what stands for us for throughout Golos, that allows us to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say that we didn't do anything much. And that's why it says kimat she'avarti. It's almost as if I was completely gone. There are two ways of looking at kimat she'avarti. It's as if I almost was over on the Averos, but it's more than that. Kimat she'avarti is I was almost lost. Because in Bavel, during those 70 years, unfortunately, we intermarried like crazy. And the amount of people that came back to the second Beis HaMikdash before Ezra came in with Ezra, very, very few amounts of people. Very few. Tens of thousands. Instead of the hundreds of thousands or millions of Jews, many, many of them stayed in Bavel. And many, many, unfortunately, intermarried. Kimat she'avarti, I was almost lost. Kate's Bavel, but there was a set end to Bavel, and everybody knew it. Remember, everybody says that Belshazzar, he made a party because he thought the 70 years were up, 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar, 23 years of evil Merodach, and 2 years of him in his third year of reign. He thought it was 70 years that were up. He knew about the 70 years. Achashverosh made the same mistake, making the party thinking that it doesn't count from the 45, it counts from when Yehoyachin was Golos, in the ninth year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, and he counted from there. And he thought that that's when it was supposed to be Kates Bavel, the end of Bavel. But Kates Bavel, the end of Bavel, Zerubbabel, refers to the Nevi'im that told us when it was going to be Lakeitz Shivim No Shafi. At the end of 70 years, I was saved, I was taken out of Bavel, and we came back to Eretz Yisrael. Then, this is goes into the Purim story, which I guess had some shaykes to during Gullah's bubble, obviously. Kiros komas barosh bikesh Agogi ben Amadasa. Agogi ben Amadasa is a reference to Haman. Haman ha Agogi. Agag is the name of the king of Amalek. Haman is there. He wanted to cut down the height of the barosh. If you'll remember in the Gemara Megillah, Daf Yudim and Beis, Yud Aleph and Aleph, it goes through that Tachas Barosh Yasa Hadas Yasa Tsarpad. That the what we say in our Haftorah and every fast day, in the Haftorah that we say at Mincha, we say that the barosh, which was a cypress, they wanted to turn it into a thorn. That Mordechai is the cypress and the thorn was Haman. That's the idea, that again, it's the same type of concept that Esther was wanting to be taken over by Vashti. It's the whole thing that he wanted, Haman HaGogi wanted to knock down the height of Mordechai and destroy the Jews that Mordechai stood for. But we became, and Mordechai became, Lafachu Amokesh, a snare and a trap. Had Haman not hated Mordechai, had he not been involved, then eventually his plan may have been gone to fruition. He was too quick in trying to destroy the Jews because he was so mad that Mordechai wouldn't bow down to him. That became a trap and a snare for him, that he tried to do things too quickly, tried to destroy the Jews too quickly, and unfortunately it didn't work. The gava so nishbasa, and his height and all of his gaiva, his pride, where he became, all of it was cut down. Rosh Yemini Nisesa, the head of the Shevet of Binyamin, was then lifted up. That Shaul HaMelech, our very first king, was finally shown one of his ancestors, one of his post-ancestors, descendants, thank you, not looking at the word, I was thinking of predecessors, one of his descendants ended up being lifting up all of what Binyamin was about, the Oyev Shmo Machisa, and the enemy Haman, his name, you erase. And we have the Timcha Ezecher Amalek, that we have a minug to write Haman's name in our shoe during Purim, to erase Haman. Rechaim Knievsky, I don't know if he still does it, whenever he tests out a new pen to see if the pen is working, writes the word Haman and then crosses it out to make sure that the pen works. They asked him once why he does that, and he says, you can get a mitzvah sasei midioraita. Every time you write the word Haman or Amalek and you erase it. So why not do the mitzvah sasei midioraita? That's what it would be. I forgot what it was when he had a stroke not too long ago. They gave him a pen and paper to write something down, and the normal thing that everybody does is they write down their own name. That's the first thing that everybody does. And Reb Chaim, what did he write down? I think it might have been this. It might have been this, that he actually wrote down the word Amalek and wanted to destroy it. And they asked him why he did it. And he said, Mitzvah Tassei Midioraisa. What do I have to write my name down for? Every time I write something, I could be Mekayim something. That would be the idea behind it. Regardless, that's Oyev Shmo Machisa. And then we have one of my favorite lines throughout everything. It's an unbelievable Purim Dika line. Rov Banov, the Kinyan of his many children and all of his Kinyanim, Allah Eitz Talisa, were hung upon the tree. So we've got two problems here. Number one, his many children. The Chazal tell us in the Gemara Megillah that he had 208 children. Gematria of Rov, Resh Vav Beis, Rov Banov. That's obviously a reference from the word in the Megillah itself, but then how could you say that many of his children died? It's not true. 10 of them were hung on the tree. The other children, they survived. Wherever they went, to Bnei Brak, they went out to go tell everybody whatever happened. At the end of the Megillah, it seems they were sent out to all the other nations to tell them what happened. But Rov Banov Ala Eitz Talisa is not true. The answer is that if you count the amount of amos that the tree was, 50 amos altogether, and you go through the height of all of them, plus the amount of space that was in between, there's no way they could have fit on top of the tree. Unless their heads were cut off. If you cut off their heads, then their height would have been 3 amos altogether, then it would fit perfectly for them to be able to fit all together on top of the tree. For the 10 sons, plus Haman, plus the space in between, the only way for it to happen. So that's the pshat. Rov Banov, most of the children, were hung upon the tree. That they were decapitated, and thus only most of the children were hung upon the tree, and that's the idea behind it. That's the famous word that they give, the Purim Dikavor from it. The only question is, what's the Kinyanov? His Kinyanim were put upon the tree? What does that mean? The Kinyanim, meaning everything that was owned by the Amalekim, were plundered by the Jews. It's a pasuk in Megillah. It was all taken by the Jews. So what is that? So it means all that was left that Haman owned, because everything else belonged to the Jews, Jews, Ala Eitz Talisa. And that includes whatever the hat was that Haman had, and anything else, all of his clothing, that was it. There was nothing else that he owned. Rov Banav Vikinyanav, all that he had left at the end of the day, of all the riches and all the power that he had in Olam Hazeh, all that was left for him were his clothes, and that's Ala Eitz Talisa. But there's another word to it. You know the Medrash that originally comes out about Haman, that Haman had sold himself as a slave to Mordechai? Sold himself as a slave to Mordechai before the whole Purim story happened. The whole thing of how it happened, it's a great mice altogether. There were generals in India together on each side. Either way, so he sold himself as a slave. A slave by Jews is an Eved Kenani. An Eved Kenani is required to undergo a process of bris milah and go to the mikvah. And he's chayiv in mitzvos like a woman. That's the reason why when when all the people went up to Mordechai and asked him why he's not bowing down to Haman, so they went up to Haman, they said to Mordechai, Mordechai said, what can I do? He's my slave, right? So they went back to Haman and they told him, the exact wording of the pasuk escapes me right now, but it's an unbelievable pasuk. The line that he gives back to them was, they say, Asher higid lo ki hu Yehudi. That they had told him that he was a Jew, or he had told them that he was a Jew, that Mordechai himself was a Jew, and therefore he won't bow down to him. But if you read it the other way around, you can read it very, very similar. Here we go. They told it to Haman, Liros, to see Hayamdu Divrei Mordechai, were the words of Mordechai true? Ki higid lahem asher hu Yehudi, that he had told them that he was a Jew. Shad is, asher ki higid lahem, because he told them, Mordechai, asher hu Yehudi, that he, Haman, had the status of a Jew. How can I bow down to him? He's my slave. If he's my slave, then he's an Eved Kenani. If he's an Eved Kenani, he had a bris milah, and he went to the mikvah. That means he's Jewish. So he's Jewish. So they said, are you really Jewish? Do you have a bris milah? To which Haman refused. No, by the way, that's one of the reasons why all the Gemaras bring down that Haman was arguing with Mordechai, and he brings down Psukim. How did Mordechai know Psukim? How could he possibly have known Psukim? Haman. How could Haman have known Psukim? The answer is, he was a slave to Mordechai, and he knew Psukim. He lived among Mordechai when he could, and then later on he left. That was that, but that's that for Purim. Yevanim nikbitzu alai. The Greeks, they gathered up upon me. Azai bimei chashmanim, and then, in the days of chashmanim, during the days of the chashmanim, whether the chashmanim came first or the Greeks came first, I'm not sure, but during those days when the chashmanim fought against them, Ufortzu Chomos Migdalai. They breached the walls of my tower. Pashupshat, front of the base of Mikdash. They breached the walls of the base of Mikdash. But it's funny. Never once does it mention that they broke down the walls of the base of Mikdash. Not once. In fact, the Greeks didn't want to do such a thing. They wanted to keep our culture. They just wanted us to Hellenize and be involved with all of their culture. They said, it's fine for you guys to learn Torah. Just treat it as you would Chokhmas Yevanis, the wisdom of Greek. So what does that mean? They broke down the walls of my tower. They never did such a thing. So Rav Wolfson asked such a question, and he says, that's the proof of how bad they were. They broke down, they made breaches in the walls as a reference to our Torah. And they made breaches within the laws of the Torah that we have. They made breaches in our Torah. And Chomos Migdalai is a reference to Shir HaShirim, where the Migdal, the towers that are always mentioned throughout Shir HaShirim, is a reference to Talmidei Chachamim and Shoals and Batei Medrash. They broke in and tried to put their own Chachma into the Chachma of the Torah, and they broke down our fences of what we have for our Torah, and they put their own thoughts and their own svaras inside. Unfortunately, at that time is exactly when Machlokas was rampant in Klal Yisrael. Until that point, we don't know of any Machlokas except for maybe Smicha on animals. There were no Machlokas that were known in Klal Yisrael. Hillel and Shammai, Beis Hillel and Beis Hillel and Shammai only argued about three things, but Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai came right after the Greeks had been Metame, had reached our temple. That's where that concept came from. The Timu Kol Hashmanim, as we all know, they were Metame, all the oils, by purposely showing us that they want to be involved, they want to, and they touched every bit of oil. Umi Nosar Kankanim, from the remnants of the bottles, Nasane Sol Shoshanim, as we know, there was a miracle that happened for us. Okay, now the famous question is, B'nei Vina, the men of understanding, Yemei Shmona, made 8 days, Kavu Shirunanim, they set it up for songs and mirth. Okay, what's Pshat? Why 8 days? If the candle lit for the first day, and then it stayed lit for the next 7 days, so the first day is not a miracle. It's only the other 7 days that are a miracle. It's the famous kasha of the Beis Yosef, the famous question of the Beis Yosef, in which the Beis Yosef asks, why in the world do we keep 8 days of Hanukkah? There are 103 answers. In fact, I have a sefer in my house called Ner Lameya, which gives 100 answers to the question. I added on three because I read three other answers that are not in that book. They were written afterward. But there are at least 103 answers to the question. The famous answers of the Beis Yosef and the Taz. One of the answers of the Beis Yosef is, one of the answers he gives is, the famous, the Rabbi Yosef Cairo, is he says that in order for a miracle to happen, we learn this from the Isha Shunamis, from Elio Anavi, we learn that in order for the oil to flow, remember she was very poor, she went to Elio Anavi and said, what can I do? Elio Anavi said, do you have any jars in your house? Take this little bit of oil and pour into the jars. As long as you have jars, you'll be able to keep pouring oil. As soon as the jars stopped, she no longer had any oil. The oil stopped going. Because for a miracle to happen, you need a kli, a receptacle, for the miracle to happen. If you have a receptacle, a miracle can be. If there's no receptacle, then there's no miracle. This is pshat. Uminoser kankanim, from the remnants of the bottles, meaning they poured the oil in, as long as there was a little bit, they lit, and that first night, they lit the whole thing, and a tiny little bit of oil remained in the lights, and that oil was used on the second night, and the third night, and the fourth night. But even the first night was a miracle, that it didn't all burn out. If it all would have burned out, then there was nothing left to make a miracle for the next 7 nights. Says the Beis Yosef, the miracle was on the first night that a little bit of oil remained, and it's hinted to, that answer of the Beis Yosef is hinted to in this shir. The Beis Yosef came after Ma'os Tzur. Umi Noser Kankanim, from the remnants of the bottles, Nasanei Slash Hashanim. That's how we were able to have a miracle, and thus the Bnei Dina, those who understood that, made Yemei Shmona, 8 days instead of 7 days as the miracle altogether. That's what they ended up coming out with. Now, so that was what I was about to say. The next part that you have to understand is we're only called roses twice. Shoshanath Yaakov, Tzahala V'Samecha, and over here by Hanukkah, Nasa Nesa Shoshanim, is the only two times we're ever called, both in songs. What's pshat?
Shoshanath.
I'm sorry?
Not in Shira Shirin.
I do not believe we're ever called roses, or it's not a reference to Bnei Yisrael as a whole. I don't remember so. What's pshat behind a rose? Now, roses are beautiful, beautiful flowers that have a bit of a smell to them, but when they wither and die, all you're left with is a thorn bush. Chazal tell us that in Mitzrayim, right when Moshe Rabbeinu got his nevuah, he got a nevuah by the sneh, which was a thorn bush. That represents Bnei Yisrael when they're not doing mitzvos in galus. A thorn bush is, Bnei Yisrael are powerful and they're thorny, meaning they can hurt other people. Meaning that's the concept of what we're like when we don't have mitzvos, we have no zchuyos, and we're in galus. We are a thorn bush. When we have zchuyos and we do mitzvos, they were known as shoshanim. At the time by Hanukkah, when we deserved it, at the end of the day, we did something right. The Hashmarim were willing to fight for the spirituality of Klal Yisrael. They were ready to go up against everything that the Greeks stood for. So at that point, Nasa, Nesla, Shoshanim were known as roses. By Purim, we did tshuva. We fasted for 3 days. 3 days. And we were willing to do anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kimu v'kibu kol yudim. We accepted the Torah all over again. At that point, we were Shoshanath Yaakov. But when we're in Golos and we don't have any mitzvos, then we're known as thorns. I heard that from Ramati Shaul Solomon 6 years ago at the Agudah convention here in Chicago. That's what he ended up saying. And that's the pshat why we're known as Shoshanim, known specifically as roses, in this case and by Purim, because Purim and Hanukkah both stand for the concept of us doing mitzvos or having something right, even though we're in Golos. And that's the idea behind it. That's over there itself. You should know, there's a lot more to talk about when it comes to Hanukkah itself, but for now, that's that. And then we go with the last paragraph. We don't know. A guy by the name of Mordechai, that's how I started off, a person by the name of Mordechai, who we don't know anything about. Or I don't know anything about. I'm sure somebody must speak about him a little bit. This last paragraph seems to have been added on. Chasof Zeroa Kachecha. Show or reveal your holy arm of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, before in Mitzrayim, you only showed the hand. By the future Geula, every miracle is going to be twice or three or four or five times greater than what we had in Mitzrayim. Chazal tell us that Rabbi Yehuda Hayanosim ben Simonim, he gave Simonim, Ditzach Adash Biachav. I mean, big deal, right? Anybody can do Rosh Hashanah. I can figure that out right now. I mean, anybody can give the first letters. But the shot is, in Mitzrayim, they only got the Rosh Hashanah. of the Makos. They got the Di of Dam, and the Tza of Tzfardea, and the Cha of Kenan. But on opposite level, we're going to get the full Kenan, the full Tzfardea, the full Dam, the full Makkah is going to happen to our enemies, those who are coming up against us. That's what it's supposed to be. And thus, the hand was in Mitzrayim, the arm will be revealed by Asid Lavo. The entire arm of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's going to be the Karev Ketz HaYeshua, and bring close the end which will proclaim our salvation, the ultimate Ketz, which is what Yaakov Avinu wanted to show us in the first place. That would be the idea of the Yeshua. Nikom nikmas dama b'decha, at that point you will revenge, or avenge, I should say, the blood of your servants that were spilled by the evil people. Me'uma harashah, from the evil nation, referencing Edom. Edom, which is probably why it was either censored or put in at some later point. Ki or chalanu a Yeshua, because the salvation is so long for us. It's been almost 2,000 years. The ain kates we may all, and we don't see an end to the evil days that are there. Dechei Admon, push out Edom, and that's what Admon is referring to. Push out the red-haired one. Everything that Edom and Seir stands for. The Tzel Tzalmon, which is a very hard thing to understand, in the shadow of Tzalmon, which is somehow a reference to Mashiach. Don't quite get it. Didn't quite understand what I read when I read the Perush on Tzalmon, so I'm going to leave it like that for right now. But at that point, Hakim Lanu Roim Shiva, you should establish for us the seven shepherds. Who are the seven shepherds? There are five different midrashim that give five different answers to the question. The one that we're used to, the Roim Shiva, is the Shiva Ushpizim, seven Ushpizim, which is Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David. That those are the seven all together, and those are the seven guys.
David and the Chase.
So there's another one that mentions Adam, Chase, Mesushelach, Noach, I believe, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Those are another Roim Shiva. There's another one that has David HaMelech in the middle that has it around. There are five different answers as to what it is that goes down there. Everybody has a different idea of what the Roim Shiva are. Is the shepherds. What does a shepherd mean altogether? The ones who are shepherds. Some say it's specifically those of our avos who were shepherds. So Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov we see as shepherds. Yosef we Yaakov know is a roeh. I'm sorry?
Yaakov was a shepherd.
For sure, by Lavan. Without a question, Yitzchak is the one that you could say was Yitzchak a shepherd. We don't see it. Avram somewhat as well. I'm sorry? Yitzchak had flocks. We know he has Meir Sha'arim. We know he's involved in the field. We don't necessarily see Yosef Hayo Roa Esachav Batzon. Roa Esachav Batzon is straight out in this week's Parsha. Then we know. So Yosef is for sure. Yaakov is for sure. Yitzchak, I don't remember a pasuk that says specifically he was a Roa, but it's clear he had flocks. Avram definitely had flocks. It was definitely some type of Roa involved. Moshe was definitely a shepherd, but Aaron was not. David HaMelech was definitely a Roeh, but who's the seventh? Then you already get into the others. It's a question. There are all these different midrashim that bring down the Roim Shiva. Obviously, it's a reference to the one that's in charge of us. And you see it here. David HaMelech is clearly a shepherd over here playing a harp with deer. That's without a question. I mean, if you have that picture, there's not much else he can do. But either way, how does he translate? How does the article translate to Salmon?
The nethermost.
Shale is shade. Shade of the nethermost. Salmon is somehow a reference to the end of days or something like that. That's you have to ask it. But we're going to stop with that for right now. That is the story of Mosor. It's a beautiful piyut that goes through, that really goes through all of our goals. And we're begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu to end it now to Mosor Yeshuasi. That's really what it is. And we really should repeat that first paragraph at the very end. Because that's really what we're asking for. Mosor Yeshuasi is a common bring us the base of Mikdash again. After all the gullies, let's go through it. Unfortunately, we don't do that, but that's the basic song of Moses, or we'll end with that.